Hey, everybody. Good morning, good afternoon, good evening. Welcome to Beekeeping for Newbies. Thank you so very much for being so doggone good looking. I do appreciate you. As always, feel free to reach out to Jeff at beekeepingfornewbies.com. That's newbees.com. And I do find you to be very attractive, just so you know. But I'm disappointed you haven't called in a while, so please check in with me. Okay, today we're going to talk a little bit about oxalic acid. And for those of you who maybe are new to it, aren't really familiar with it, oxalic acid is a naturally occurring compound that we're going to discuss a little more in detail later on. A lot of stuff we're going to talk about with it today. But the real driver, well, you know what? I'm going to get out of control here. I'm going to get off task. I'm trying to be more organized. And here, you guys just let me go off the rails. Today's warm-up song is Don't Stop Believing. I was going to say that that was brought to you by Aerosmith to see how many people are actually paying attention. But of course, it's by Journey. So thank you, Journey, for helping me get warmed up today. Don't forget to jump over to fancyfortunecookies.com. Check out their tasty custom fortune cookies for all occasions. They've got strawberry, blueberry, black raspberry, chocolate. You can do custom company logos on them. You can even get the giant fortune cookie that is 5 inches tall, 7 inches wide, and has a 1 foot long customizable fortune on the inside. Use code Beekeeping for Newbies to get 20% off your first order. fancyfortunecookies.com. I want to say a special thank you to Tony, who just joined out there in the Buy Me a Coffee worker tier, adding to the depth of the amazing support that we're getting out of the Midwest and the Plains. I greatly appreciate all of your support. DJ is still holding the fort down in the South. Chris and David up in New England. Our many friends in Australia, my British Columbia, Manitoba, and Alaska crew, everybody who's up north over there. We've got Sharpie out there, and I think he's in Finland. He's going to give me a hard time if I'm wrong on that one. But he's out there in those Nordic kind of areas. So lots of great folks all over the world. So thank you all very, very much for the support and for listening. Okay, so we were talking the other day in the Discord room, and a conversation came up. One of our great listeners up in New York, he was like, hey, getting ready to get an oxalic acid vaporizer. And we're like, hey, that's pretty cool. That's exciting. And he mentioned about some changes to the dosage of the treatment for oxalic acid vaporization. And he said, the standard for this forever has been like 1 to 1.5 grams per box, not to exceed per brood box, not to exceed 4 grams per hive. And then the conversation kind of went on a little bit, and then it basically came up to, be 4 grams per brood box. And I think he mentioned something in there about some people even saying as many as 6 or whatever. So I heard this and I was like, hey, are you sure about that? So he sends a link to a podcast where they were discussing this. So we're gonna talk not only about that, we're gonna talk about a few other things today. But before we jump in here too far, I want to ask you if you listen to the podcast wherever you like to listen to it. If you want to listen to it on YouTube, that's absolutely fine over there. I do put it over there commercial free. It's really just to kind of drive a little bit more activity over that way, because I think I made like $130 in ad revenue or whatever through the podcast. If you're thinking about like, this is your big chance to like leave your full-time job and run out to be a full-time beekeeping podcaster now, probably not the best time to do that. It's not the most revenue generating and rewarding financially thing in the world that you could possibly be doing with your time. Anyway, it's not like I'm making money on it, right? So if you want to listen wherever you want to listen, if you're over there on YouTube, though, like I said, it's ad-free, and it does help with some of the watch time. But check that out over there. We've got lots of different videos on things. We're obviously rolling out some more last year as we get those new bees in here that are already on order, so that's pretty exciting. The new website is up and running. It's probably about 95% of where it needs to be. I have the new experiments section up. If I missed anything, please let me know. We've talked about a lot of experiments over the past probably 6 months or so that we want to do next year. I've captured a lot of them. I don't think I've got them all, but they're now categorized and broken down. So you can now log in and see what we've got going on. I don't know if you can hear this or not. The locust in the background just started kicking. I got the windows open. It's been absolutely amazingly beautiful lately here. Anyway, so the experiments are broken down by section. If we're missing something, please let me know. We'll get that added to the list. And same thing with the downloads. All the old downloads from the old site have been moved over, but they're categorized now, making it a little bit easier to kind of find those. We are going to add a registration section soon. That's going to better support the things that we're rolling out to our members and people who are getting the what do you call it? Like the monthly checklist that we send out as part of our membership tiers. But there's also going to be like the regular newsletter that we, I think we messed around with it a little bit. I can't believe how loud those locusts are. Anyway, the newsletter is going to come out and we'll have that going out monthly as well. So that's not going to, I'm not even going to mess with that probably till after Christmas, but we're going to create a few more things on the list to, you know, for the website to get that updated. All right. I'm going to stop rambling about a bunch of stuff that you guys probably don't care about. So let's jump in and talk about oxalic acid. We'll talk about what it is and how we use it, all those good things. The form that we use it in as beekeepers is the crystallized oxalic acid dihydrate powder. It is a naturally occurring organic compound. It's found in plants like, you know, spinach, rhubarb, buckwheat. You find it in honey. It's a very useful and effective treatment to kill varroa mites without harming the bees. It doesn't leave a long-term, you know, like residue in the wax. You can use it with honey supers on. There are several different delivery methods available. As of right now, Apibioxal and EasyOx are the only two that are U.S. registered oxalic acid products that are labeled for honeybee use, you know, here in the U.S. Now, you can get Viroxan, which is, it is also an approved oxalic acid product, but it is used in a strip form, kind of like your Apivar strips. So if you're familiar with those, you know, it's the same type of thing, like I said, in the strip form. But we're talking, you know, specifically about the vaporized delivery or vaporized administration today. Now, the reason that I wanted to have the discussion is I appreciate, first off, everybody who brings things up in the Discord room or whether it's by email. I appreciate you taking the time to share that information with everybody. I think it's absolutely amazing. It's a great community and everybody, you know, being able to share observations, thoughts, ideas. It's absolutely awesome. We just have to be careful about how we do it. And we have to make sure that we're sharing all the information and we have to do it in a way that doesn't introduce any kind of confusion. So when we talk specifically about this example today, Apibioxal was originally approved through the EPA to use as 1 gram per brood box. And the testing supported that. Everybody across the board, industry-wide, has accepted, yep, 1 gram per brood box, 1 to 1.5, no more than 4 per hive. Everything's great. They've done the testing. They've made the case to the EPA and said, hey, we're going to go to 4 grams per brood box, again, in a vaporized form. Now, EasyOx, they've registered at 2 grams per brood box, which, again, these are still 2 to 4 times the dosage that people have been typically using. Now, while we're talking about the different, you know, the two registered and EPA approved brands, I do want to bring something up. It's in line, it's on topic, slight tangent. There are generic oxalic acid powders available. This is commonly called wood bleach. It is not registered with the EPA for use in honeybees. So using it is, you know, that if it is not labeled as an EPA approved product, it is technically not legal. So you definitely don't want to go to Amazon and find a company called Florida Laboratories and buy a 2-pound bag for $15.85. I will put a link to that so that you know. I'll put a link in the description somewhere so that you'll be able to know this is what you don't buy. Because I just want to make sure that if you happen to see it somewhere, you'll know I can't buy that. Now, from a chemical standpoint, I think it's like 99.98% pure or whatever it is. But again, companies like that have not gone through the EPA process, and it doesn't matter how much it's the same. If you don't play the game right, like, it's what's going to happen, right? Is somebody going to show up at your house when you're treating for oxalic, you know, with oxalic acid and like take you to jail because you're not using the same stuff from, you know, from a non-approved supplier? Probably not. But again, it's a matter of where you are in your position. Like, if I do a video at my house and I'm using oxalic acid, you're going to be guaranteed that you're going to see one of those branded labels on it, because I sort of have a responsibility as an educator in the beekeeping space to make sure I'm telling you guys to do the right thing. But I also kind of see this thing in my mind where it's kind of like having the government tell you, look, no, you can't buy Great Value brand table salt, but it's okay to buy Morton's, even though they're both NaCl, you know, sodium chloride. I struggle with that a little bit. So what I tell you again, always follow the law, do the right thing. You know, don't do anything that is not officially sanctioned by the EPA. And definitely don't buy the stuff from the Florida laboratories that I'll provide the link to so that you know not to buy that. Okay, but the key point on all of this is the 4 gram per brood box. This applies only to the apobioxal with the updated EPA label. This does not apply across the board. Now, the reason that I think it may be important to really pay attention closely here, and I joke around a lot about buying, you know, off-brand things or whatever it is, but it is possible, and I don't think this is the case, but it's something worth considering. They may have said, hey, we have this oxalic acid-based solution, and we've added some additional additives in here to it that accomplish or serve another purpose or accomplish another task or have another benefit, I should say, within the overall solution. So you have to use more in order to make, you know, take advantage of all of these compounds together. That could be the case. But what I believe has actually happened is there's been a lot of testing done. I have access to some myself, and I can't share some of them because of the way that I obtained them was through a university license. So if I just give people the PDFs of them, they kind of frown on that because they're actually like a paid subscription to get access to them. But there are two specific articles that I wanted to share with you, or at least some of the contents of them. In one of them, they were doing 5, 10, 15, and 20 grams per hive concentrations on every treatment. And, I mean, you're talking like literally at 20 grams, you know, you're talking about, and that was for the entire you know, hive, the full colony, at 20 grams. That's literally like 5 times the dosage. Now, what they found was at that high of a level, they did see about a 31% mortality rate in the bees. Now, in a separate study that I have here, this one is really good, and I have to see if I don't know if I can share this one or not, but I'll just read directly. Let me just see real quick. It's from the Journal of Apiculture Research. Well, I'll tell you, if you can find it, it's determining the dose of oxalic acid applied via vaporization needed for the control of honeybee Apis mellifera pest varroa destructor. So it's by Cameron Jack, Edzard Van Satten, and James Ellis. So everybody knows, like, Dr. Ellis down there in University of Florida, very well-respected, you know, beekeeper and researcher. But in this article, it says, in this study, we observed an inverse relationship between varroa destructor infestations and OA dose. So this makes sense, right? You have a higher oxalic acid dosage, you would expect an inverse relationship or a reduction in the varroa destructor infestation. As the OA dose increased, we observed a decrease in varroa destructor infestation, though differences between similar doses that were adjacent to one another in this study, were never statistically different from one another. Now, it goes on to reference another researcher, but similarly, this other researcher tested a range of dosage applied via sublimation and observed no significant differences in varroa destructor infestations between 2.25 and 4.5 grams. However, they did observe a slight increase in colony mortality in colonies treated with 4.5 grams of oxalic acid several months after treatment. So the reason this, now we're finally at the whole reason that I'm bringing this up, is more is not always better. And because these companies now have approval to use a higher dosage, and because nationally we are in a bit of a crisis trying to figure out how we're going to handle this whole amitraz resistance, and, you know, everybody's scrambling to find a solution. So I think, again, I haven't read in detail what the approval specifics are. I know it is approved. I validated it on the EPA website for, you know, for these other dosages. But I'm really curious to see how this works in the efficacy long term. I just don't know that anybody has really studied that. But then if you think about it, let's say that everybody says, you know, I'm going to push it up to 4.5 or 5 grams. From what I've seen, like, that's roughly been pretty stable. I've looked at 4 or 5 different reports and studies that were conducted, and all of them seem to have that as a pretty safe range. So let's just say you just standardize, you're doing 5 grams on every treatment. If you're doing that and that works, and that's great, but then you start noticing some increased level of mortality 2, 3, 4 months down the road. Well, what if you didn't treat? Would you have 50, 60, 70% mortality? Like, do you just have to accept the fact that, yeah, you know, we're doubling or tripling the dosage and that kind of stinks. It's slightly more expensive. I mean, oxalic acid is really, really cheap, you know, method of treatment across the board. It's far more inexpensive compared to lots of other things. But maybe that's what you have to accept. Like, yeah, you know I'm going to sacrifice some colonies. I'm going to lose a certain percentage of them because we're hitting them with such a high dosage. but that might be just an acceptable level of risk that you have to take in order to combat, you know, the mites and some of the other resistance challenges that we're seeing in other places. So again, the key takeaway with all of this is I've completely lost my script too. I'm over reading all these other notes. I got the Discord up in the background, which is really a bad idea because of my whole lack of ability to focus. But the real takeaway with all of this is just really paying attention to what you're doing. Make sure you're taking notes. Take your notes and say, okay, I've been doing, let's say, 1.5 grams per box. I'm doing 3 grams per colony on my double deeps. I'm going to bump it to 4. Go ahead and increase that dosage up to 4. If you want, go ahead and go up to 5. But again, use those things in accordance with the manufacturer's instructions. So if you have a product that is not labeled for the higher dosage, then you have to make a decision as to what's right for you on whether or not you're going to use the higher dosage anyway, or you're going to purchase the other product that is approved or whatever you want to do. And I've told you guys before, like, I'm a huge oxalic acid fan, but we also need to make sure that we're balancing this. This came up in a discussion today with a different product, but you always need to make sure that you're balancing your treatment methods, or at least I shouldn't say balancing. You need to have an alternate treatment method. I'm kind of bad about this. I love oxalic acid. It's been tremendously effective for me. And when it didn't work, then I would just throw some Apivar strips in, and that usually took care of everything. Well, that's not really an option for me anymore. So now it's probably going to be oxalic acid, you know, when times are good, and I'll probably hit them with Formic when times are not. But it is important to remember that they have limitations. You know, oxalic acid is a more gentler, you know, a gentler approach. And when you get really high infestation numbers, you're not going to be able to knock that down historically with oxalic acid. So now the question is, under a typical 3 to 4 gram dosage where you have those higher numbers, and there are some charts, if somebody's really interested and they're like, hey, I want to see these charts, I want to see this document, I'll try to see if I'm allowed to release this or what I need to do to get permission to release it. But there are charts in there showing that the higher dosages are definitely making a difference from this research study. But you might find, like, hey, you know, I was going from, let's say, 5 to 6 mites, you know, in per 100. And if I was treating at 3 to 4 grams, it was staying stable and not really making a change. But when I went to 5 or 6 grams, well, now it came down to between 3 and 4. You can keep notes and keep track of that and see what's working. And then maybe your dependence on that second treatment method wouldn't necessarily have to be there. I still recommend a mild and a more aggressive, just being able to have a second treatment option available. It's really important. In fact, in that study, it says right here, however, it is necessary to reiterate the importance of rotating chemical treatments to prevent possible varroa destructor development of resistance to oxalic acid. Again, there's no known resistance today, but I'll tell you honestly, man, if that happens, we got a big problem, because oxalic acid, being a gentler approach, being something that is a naturally occurring compound, it's just one of the better treatment options out there. It can be delivered through different methods, which I think, yeah, I've got, in fact, that's right here in my notes. You got your vaporization, you got the dribble method, you can do the OA pads, or now you can buy like the Viroxan, you know, through the strips. Now, if you want to learn about these, if you go to bestbeekeepinggear.com, there's kind of like an all about varroa section. It talks about a lot of the common illnesses, diseases, and things that are transmitted from the virus itself. But it also goes into these dribble method treatments and things. And then from there, it points back to Randy Oliver over at scientificbeekeeping.com for the really nitty gritty, down and dirty. Like, when you want to dive in deep, that's where you want to go. Great, you know, great resource over there. Eating healthy can feel like a chore sometimes, right? But I've found something that makes it easy and delicious. Washington Red Raspberries. These aren't just any frozen berries. They're grown by family farmers in Washington State, picked at peak ripeness and frozen within hours to lock in nutrients. We're talking fiber, antioxidants, vitamin C, real nutrition with no added sugar, just fruit as nature intended. I toss them into smoothies, stir them into yogurt, and even top my oatmeal with them. They're so fresh and full of flavor, I actually look forward to eating healthier. And honestly, it feels so good knowing I'm supporting American family farms every time I grab a bag, and you'll know they're grown right here in the U.S. because it says so on the package. You can find Washington Red Raspberries at Costco, Kroger, Meijer, and Winco Foods. Look for them in Kirkland's 3-Berry Blend, Smucker's Raspberry Jam, Peanut Butter and Raspberry Uncrustables, or those True Fruit chocolate-covered raspberries I can't stop snacking on. Want recipes, tips, or to see all the places you can find them? Go to redraz.org. That's R-E-D-R-A-Z-Z.org.
Saving money right now at Menards. products. From smoke and carbon monoxide detectors to fire extinguishers and more, Kidde Home Safety Products keep your family protected in case of emergencies. Smoke and carbon monoxide detectors are perfect for your living spaces, offering protection and peace of mind. Save big money on all Kidde products at Menards. Plus, check out our weekly flyer on Menards.com for all the great deals happening now. Save big money
at Menards. Now, I do want to talk to you quickly about safety and just obviously looking out for yourself. Vaporized oxalic acid is kind of, it's not something to really play around with. What I have is like, I think it's Mira Safety is the company. Like I have a full, basically like nuclear biological chemical type of mask with the changeable filters. That's what I have and what I use. And it's designed to filter, you know, pretty much everything with the specific filter that I have on it. You need to make sure that you are getting an appropriate mask to cover, to make sure you're not breathing this in, you're not inhaling these vapors. They can cause permanent damage to your lungs. Obviously, in extreme scenarios, you could potentially end up becoming, what do they have to say, unalived. You can't say certain things online anymore, but you would have a bad time with it. But really, you can get permanent lung damage by breathing this in. You don't want to expose that to yourself, especially like those mucous membranes of the eyes. You want to have your eyes covered and protected as well. So proper PPE, personal protective equipment, you know, an acid gas respirator, sealed goggles, gloves. You're definitely supposed to use gloves. I don't, just being honest with you, I really don't. I generally will have gloves on anyway because I'm, you know, right there at the entrance of the hive and they might get a little angry at what I'm doing, but I don't have like rubber gloves or anything on. But you got to protect your lungs, your eyes, your mouth, your face. You make sure you're doing what you got to do to protect yourself there. So to talk about a couple of like the, I guess what I would say would be the top three questions that I have seen around this. Can I use any oxalic acid powder at 4 grams per brood box? And the answer is no. Only apobioxal with the updated label saying 4 grams or EasyOx with the 2 grams. You can't do generic oxalic acid. You can't go buy whatever you want to buy. You can't just get the wood bleach. You can't use it at the higher dosage. You need to make sure you're using the product that is approved for it. I know, again, it's a tough thing to deal with sometimes. Honestly, it's not that much more expensive if you want to play by the rules. But again, you got to make the decision that's right for you. Can I treat with Honey Supers on? That still hasn't changed. You can still treat with Honey Supers on. Now, my cautionary note here is, and again, I'm not picking on the government entities or whatever, but you know, research is presented to them and they say, hey, look, we've done the research. There's no residual, you know, impact here. The oxalic acid is not penetrating into inside the cappings to get to where it would impact or negatively affect the honey. And, you know, it's perfectly safe. Of course, then you decap, but then your cappings end up, the honey runs across all the cappings and into your honey that you're going to consume. So is there any possibility that there's anything left behind at a concentration that would be damaging or harmful to people? A lot of people that I speak with regularly say, look, I'm still pulling my Honey Supers off when I'm treating with oxalic acid vaporization. I pull the Honey Supers off. If that's what you want to do, if you feel safer with that, there's nothing wrong with that. You just have to do what's right for you. You can legally treat or safely, allegedly treat with them on. When is oxalic acid vaporization the most effective? It is generally considered to be a very effective approach during periods that are broodless. And, you know, because of course the mites are going to reproduce inside of brood. So inside of developing, you know, brood when they're in that pupal phase, that's when the mites are reproducing and feeding off those young pupa or pupae. So you treat with the vapor, it doesn't penetrate the cappings, and then you get into that every 5 to 7 day treatment cycle where you treat, you wait 5-7 days, you treat again, and you wait again for that third time so that you're covering the entire brood cycle so that no matter what, there was a treatment that was performed on that colony at least a time when there were no bees under cappings if you do it with that kind of a cycle. Now, what I kind of do is I'll get, you know, package bees. As soon as package bees show up, treat them right away. There's no capped brood, so that's an easy opportunity to take care of that. if you want to hit them in the winter. Somebody had said at one point in time that if you did a treatment in the winter, that it could disrupt something within the hive. And I have to go back and look at what that was. It almost led me to believe that they were implying that if you were to treat them, like when they were in their winter cluster, that it would not necessarily penetrate the full cluster. So the bees on the inside would not get the full treatment, and the ones on the outside would get a really heavy dosage. So I'm not 100% on exactly. I need to do some research on that to see what I can figure out. But definitely treating during dearths, new packages, or the multiple treatment approach is the way you're going to have to do that to make sure that if there is brood present, you're getting treatment to all of the bees. Now, one last thing. This just came up today. We were talking, a member had brought up an interesting situation coming out of North Carolina, and I wanted to share it with everybody. And again, whenever I bring things up like this, I'm doing it because I think it's critically important that we recognize and appreciate everybody collaborating and sharing information with one another. And I also want to make sure that we emphasize the importance on taking things in context and making sure that we don't get scared or overreact. It's very easy sometimes to see something and say, oh my gosh, this is crazy. What's going on? It's the end of the world. I think we kind of live in this sort of alarmist world nowadays where we're just like waiting for the next bad thing to happen. But somebody had mentioned in the Discord room today, they were like, hey, we got some folks here in the bee club that are having some real problems with Apigard treatments. They're not working, and they're having higher mite counts, you know, after a treatment. So I kind of started chatting with the person. If you're in the Discord room, feel free to jump in and check out the conversation. Now, just so that you know, if you're not familiar with it, so Apivar, that is a, I did get confused in this too, because at the very end of their discussion, they said there's about 10 members that are active that had a few common observations. Many of the poor results are from those who are using Apivar purchased last year. So that's where I'm kind of confused, just to make sure we're talking Apigard and Apivar, because he came back and said, yeah, it's definitely this product. But anyway, so Apigard and Apivar, the chemical, underlying chemical is amitraz. This is what we've been having a big problem with across the country for the past year, the known varroa mite resistance to amitraz. Apigard is a thymol-based mite treatment. So thymol is it's a gentler treatment option, very much like oxalic acid is. So every treatment, you know, is going to have its quirks, things you have to do, you shouldn't do, certain temperature ranges potentially in some of them. But the key point, like we talked about earlier today, is making sure that you have an ability to rotate treatments since you have other options. Because here's my concern, and again, I appreciate this person bringing this to my attention, but I think he had mentioned it's like 10 people that were talking about this. One really, really common thing that I see is people will basically do nothing. And I was guilty of this. I'm bringing it up because I did it, right? So I know it happens because I literally did it. But you start out in the spring and you're like, oh yeah, I'll go ahead and throw some treatment on. Or you go, oh, you know, I kind of forgot to do it early. Well, I want to get some honey, and I'm not going to treat with Apivar while the honey is on. So I'll wait till the honey flow is over. So then you get the flow going, and for me, it's like June timeframe. And then I treat in June, July during that broodless period. But my mite counts were really, really high for the entire spring. So maybe I knock them down, but I got some sick bees, but hopefully it's okay. But see, that's the problem. The problem is a lot of people, maybe they do a treatment in March, April. Then they do nothing in like April, May, June, July, August. So now we get to like August, September, and everybody wants to play catch up. And like I said, I know I've done it myself. And I've gotten to the point where I do a treatment and I'm like, cool, man, my mite counts nothing. This is great. And my bees are as sick as they can be, and they die in like November, December, because they were just, the viral loads were just through the roof, and they were, you know, really sick. Again, didn't know it at the time. I had no idea what was going on. So, and there's another thing that I call like bandwagoning, where people don't do the right thing and they don't want to admit that their bees failed because they didn't treat them. And someone says, yeah, I'm having trouble with this thing. And they're like, yeah, me too. I have the same problem, right? Now, again, I'm not saying that that is the case with these people. These could all be very experienced, highly squared away, you know, beekeepers. But, you know, Apigard, again, being a thymol-based solution, there is no broadly, you know, known mite resistance to this yet. So thymol and oxalic acid are still things that we are having, you know, good treatment results with. But it's important to recognize that it is a gentle treatment. So let's just say that, as an example, you have two scenarios. The one I just gave you, somebody maybe did or didn't treat, let's say, in March, and now they're treating in August. Well, if you're treating with a gentler type of treatment, and let's say you had your counts were 12 per 100, 10 or 12 per 100, and you treat, and then you check again a couple of days later, and you're at 15, 16 per 100. Yeah, well, the numbers are getting worse because you need a much more aggressive treatment. You're at a point where they're raising brood in preparation for the overwintering. The winter bees are being, you know, being created right now and are emerging in the coming weeks and months. So they now have a brand new breeding ground, and your mite counts are going to go up. You've got to get aggressive. Now, the opposite scenario, let's say that somebody came to me and said, hey, I did my first treatment in March. My mite numbers were good for April, May, June, July, August, all of these months, everything was good. I just did a treatment on August 30th and I'm at 10. Like, to me, that's like, wow, you know, things were in really good shape. But during this, you know, this fall flow, clearly there's a problem. Boom, get aggressive. You're going to hit them with something like formic or whatever it makes sense for you. You're going to hit them a little bit more aggressively because staying with that nice gentle approach that you've been using, you know, maybe you did treat once or twice with a gentler approach, you know, in April, May, June somewhere. But again, if you're keeping track and you're keeping the numbers and you have a log and you can go back and you know exactly what you did and how much you gave and when you did it, that's night and day compared to I'll just treat two times a year and hope it works out. Because that's a really, really common thing. And I'm pretty sure if I go back and even listen to a podcast, I might even tell people like, yeah, that's kind of what I did for a long time. You know, I would just hit them in the spring, hit them, you know, midsummer, hit them again before, you know, before they go into the winter, and I'm good. And you can broadly get away with that a lot, especially if you're in areas where you don't have big mite problems. But you got to stay aggressive. You got to keep track of these things. It's really, really important to stay on top of it. So one last thing, I just want to reiterate that, again, I appreciate everybody sharing information. I think it's really important that we do so. And we need to make sure that we don't allow ourselves to overreact or get scared. Let's take things in context. Let's break it down. Let's see where I'm always skeptical and I kind of feel bad. I feel like maybe people think like I'm picking on them or that I'm angry at them. And that's not the case at all. I want people to bring things to our attention, but I'm going to always take a skeptical eye to things because I know what I did. And I have a lot of beekeepers who are very transparent, who email and they're like, it's almost like being like in an AA group, whatever. They're like, hi, I'm Mike and I didn't treat my bees. Hi, Mike. You know, that kind of thing. Like it is what it is. Sometimes you just have to learn the hard way. I did. I look back and I remember dumping out a colony of bees. I'm like, oh my God, it's a dead out. And then seeing them like moving around in the cluster of bees that I dumped on the ground. And I'm like, oh my gosh, are they still alive? No, they had like a paralysis virus of some sort. And they were completely, you know, just viral loads had to have been through the roof. If I sent them to the Beltsville lab, I'm sure they would have told me that. Which, by the way, on a separate subject, we need to revisit that and double check that. If you have a chance, do a search and check for news on the Beltsville bee lab. I heard something the other day about something with maybe it trying to be shut down or gotten rid of or something like that. So we need that Beltsville bee lab. So I'll try to make a note right now to follow up on that as well. So the next couple of episodes I have on the way for everybody, we're going to be talking about spring versus fall pollen, I think, next week. And then we're going to get into like prepping for, you know, prepping your hives for winter. Got a couple other ideas on the list here. Join us over in the Discord room. On the new site, things are a little bit different. I'm still got to figure out a few things and move things around, but there is a Discord link on the site. It's about halfway down the page. So feel free to join us there, bestbeekeepinggear.com. Lots of different write-ups and things. youtube.com/@beekeepingfornewbies. Always drop me an email if you're bored and want to check in. And try to enjoy this weather. I hope wherever you are, you're having weather that's as nice as I am. Like, we're Fahrenheit, like 73 to 75. At night, it's getting like 65 to 68, somewhere in there. It's just been absolutely amazing. I don't even want to get out of bed. But take care. Be kind to one another. Remember that I love you. And there's nothing you can do about it. We'll talk to you soon.